We're so excited you guys are here. We have prepared for this. Honestly, we prepared for like a year in advance. So my husband was the brave one to be kind of the liaison for all the ladies in charge of it. So I have heard nothing but ladies conference for probably a solid 7 months or so. So we really enjoy it though. We're so excited everybody's here. We work hard and enjoy when you come and let us hopefully influence your lives a little bit. A little bit about me. My name is Darcy Williams, and you know that already from the session title, but I am a wife and a mom of three kids. I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a almost 2-year-old. So they keep us busy. I am very nervous. This is not, I will be honest, like if you told me I could jump out of a plane instead of stand up here, I probably would do it. Obviously with a parachute, but I'm just saying, this is not my favorite thing to do. And honestly, you're kind of, I've never really done this before other than to teenagers, so this is new for me. However, I almost claimed it on that game. I did not do very well in the game, so that's all I have to say. But I was joking with my friend sitting next to me because we sit by each other quite often, and they'll play games, and we never, ever win. And I'm just like, it's just us. We don't ever. I don't get picked. I don't win. I don't get points. I'm like, oh, well, I won't get bitter about it. But anyways, so I am excited, although this is new, and I am nervous, and you're going to have to bear with my nerves and probably my shakiness. It has been really cool for me to see how God's brought along what he wants me to share today and what he's kind of shown me, what he has, and clarified that and even confirmed it, even today. It was funny, I was sitting in the session first thing, which was great, wasn't that? First lesson, just awesome, I really enjoyed it. But she said a couple things, and I was like, wait, that's a point in my class, too. So it's really cool to see how God has kind of confirmed what he has. Okay, so together. So as I was preparing this, my husband, like, speaks pretty often, and so I was sharing with him what I was going to talk about, and he kind of encouraged me to think of a phrase or a thought that I would kind of base the whole session on. So if there was something that if you were to leave here and you remembered one thing, what would that be? And we're talking about friendship. And so I read in John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. And when we look in scripture, we find Jesus is our greatest example of friendship. And it says in Proverbs 17:17, a friend loveth at all times, a brother is born for adversity. And I read this actually just this morning as I was preparing. Charles Spurgeon put it this way about the verse, a friend loveth at all times, a brother is born for adversity. There is a friend, blessed forever be his name, who loveth at all times. There is a brother who in an emphatic sense was born for adversity. Sorry, guys. I am so nervous. That friend is Jesus, the friend of sinners, the friend of man, the brother of our souls, born into this world that he might succor or support us in our adversities. So as we look at God's example, this is kind of what I came away with. True friendship is not about what can I, the love and acceptance that I can find in a relationship, but the love and acceptance that I can pour into a relationship as Christ has done for us. So I keep looking over here and I'm getting nervous. So my friend Julie's in here and we have been friends. I actually did the math, this is crazy, but 17 years. So when I was in ninth grade, I know, right? Makes me feel like when I say it, but we became friends in ninth grade. So the fact that she's in here, like, makes it even more special, but then I keep looking at her and she's getting teary-eyed and I'm like, what in the world? I'm already nervous. So, the whole idea of friendship is that we are going to be pouring into another relationship. And when you look at those verses, when you look at that thought, who is our greatest example of friendship? When you hear that. And Jesus Christ paid the ultimate sacrifice. He gave his son, he died on the cross for us to, for our good and our, when we look at that, when we put our needs aside and we take our wants and our desires and we put that aside for the benefit of someone else, we show true Christ-like love. And that's kind of what I want to base this off of today. I'm going to start, this is going to yes, this is a Christian conference, and so you might expect this, but think about this. The first thing I want to say is start with Jesus. It's easy to say, okay, well, you have to say that this is a Christian conference, but I cannot even begin to stress enough how important that your relationship with Jesus is on a good, in a good place for you to have deep and good relationships outside of that. If you're going to have a good friendship, it's going to start with you finding your security, your identity, everything in Jesus Christ, and not in that relationship. So, in John 4, 13 through 14, it said, Jesus answered and said unto her, it's talking about the woman at the well, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. So Jesus is the only one that can truly fulfill our deepest needs. In Matthew 22, 37 through 39, it says, Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So honestly, for the longest time in my life, I always saw my personal walk with Jesus as that checklist. It wasn't that I saw Jesus as, you know, a judge with a hammer that was going to pop me on the head if I didn't spend time with him, but I did see it as a way to make him happy with my Christian life. So I would see, okay, if I spend time with Jesus, then he's going to be happy with it, we're good, we're on good terms, and I can go through life. And the truth is, that's not why God desires us to have a relationship with him. He desires it because he knows that we are going to influence people, and he wants us to come. He knows that our lives will be the fullest if we are going to him for all of those needs, and then he can work through us to the people that we're going to influence. So, so having a healthy relationship with Jesus, these are, I'm sorry, give me a minute. Having a healthy relationship with Jesus does a few things for us as we move in this area of friendship. Having a healthy relationship with Jesus will, first of all, keep our conduct and conversation in line with what glorifies him. Philippians 1:27 says, only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand steadfast in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. So it's so important. How quickly do we get into conversations with ladies and our tongue gets out of control and we start to say things and you're almost like you're sitting there going, I shouldn't be saying this right now, but it's coming out. So it's so important when we have a good relationship with Jesus Christ, he controls that and he works in us to stop us before it's too late, before we say things we shouldn't say. So that's the first thing. The second thing, and this is what I would say is the biggest, it will keep our dependence on God and not on the other relationship. There are about four basic needs that drive us at all times. Okay, and I don't know about you guys, but this is me, so maybe you say I don't struggle with this, but I do. Acceptance, identity, security, and purpose. So our acceptance, what do people think about us? Our identity, who am I? Who am I? Our security, what's next? What's coming? What is going on in my life right now? And then our purpose, what am I here for? Although these can, to a degree, be met on a human level, only God can fulfill them at the deepest level. God can use your relationships to fulfill these needs, but when we look to the relationship to fulfill the needs instead of to God, we will put a stranglehold on that relationship. All of a sudden, that person is not able to provide what you are expecting from them in return. And so that's, I would say, is the biggest reason why I say that about our relationship with Jesus coming first, and then we can have the relationships with other people. And then lastly, and this is kind of where we're going to build off from here, it will give us wisdom to both influence and be influenced. In Colossians 3:16, it says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. We're going to kind of build off of this from here on out. But to have a healthy relationship, first having that relationship with Jesus Christ, but then second is going to be that this idea of influencing others and being influenced by others. Okay, so first of all, start with Jesus. And the second one, don't make excuses. Now, I don't know, we all have different, so some might struggle with something, some might. How many of you would say, I am a total people person and I get along, I talk with everybody, I'm fine with that? Anybody? Couple, okay. Okay, so how many of you would say, I'm more introverted, I'm in here because I need to figure out how to come out and be a better friend? How many of you would say that? Okay. How many of you are in the middle? Okay. Okay, so Proverbs 18:24 says, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. Okay? Proverbs 18:24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than brother. I will tell you right now, in my marriage, and some people don't know this because I try to step out of my shell a little bit at church and everything, but my husband talks to everybody. He can carry on conversations with people so easy. And I'm that one, okay, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one, but you go in the bathroom to wash your hands at church and there's somebody else washing their hands and you know you should probably strike up a conversation because you're both right there and it's awkward. I am the person that is literally like, I want to pretend like nobody else is here and wash my hands in peace and leave and everything be good. Okay, that is me. I do not strike up conversations well. If I don't know you, the idea of having to build a conversation is the scariest thing to me. I am very awkward, and I probably ask very awkward questions. But anyways, hence the reason I'm probably so nervous up here right now. But my husband's not that way. So some people are more introverted, some people are extroverted. So our first excuse is generally our personality. I have heard so many times, I'm just not a people person. I'm really shy. I don't do well with talking to people. sorry, I'm going to find my spot here. I got ahead. So we are all different. And there are some people that thrive off of time with others, and there are some people that just prefer to be alone. I'll honestly say this is just something that it's a learned thing. Like I said, when I'm at church, I try. We actually, our pastor had us take a test for our staff training, and it was kind of a personality test for us to see how we are with different areas and stuff. And naturally, I am very much introverted. I prefer to stay home, everything be normal. My husband is very much extroverted. He loves to be around people, but we found that in our ministry, I would always kind of come over to the side in the way that I would respond. And it's just been 10 years of being in ministry. I can't come into church and be introverted, or I'll offend somebody. It won't work well. So it is something that is learned. If all you can muster is a smile and a hello, then maybe next time you can muster a smile and a hello, how are you? And kind of build off of that and take the time to get to know people. Maybe have a one-on-one conversation. Take somebody to coffee where you can slowly build into it. It is something that is learned. And what I would say to that is shyness is not an excuse for rudeness. And it is very easy to be rude whenever you tend to be shy, because it's just you are more comfortable in that. And talking about going back to Christ's example, and like I said earlier, if the greatest show of Christ's love is when we sacrifice our own comfort for the good of someone else, so taking that into account. The second reason is denial. I don't need friends. And there's a lot of reasons that we say this. I've heard it said from somebody who's shy or just prefers to be alone. So if you prefer to be alone, if you have a lot of family around, this is a big one. We spent a few years in Georgia, and I actually had a lady tell me, I don't need friends, I have my family. And she never really cultivated friendships outside of her family because she had sisters and brothers and everybody around, so they didn't cultivate that. Newlyweds can say this a lot. Why? Because you get married and you're excited, and that person, you do everything with them, and you don't cultivate the relationships outside of the marriage. And then the other one, I have enough friends. If we've grown up in the same town or you've lived somewhere this for a long time, you can tend to fall into that trap of, I don't need new friends because I've got these friends. I grew up with them since kindergarten. Everything's good, so I don't need the friends. We all need friends to do life with, and even if you don't think you need friends, even if you're adamant, I don't need friends, there is going to be somebody that brings along into your life that needs you to be their friend. So it's important that we are keeping that in mind. I'm going to try to tell this story because she's in here, but I don't know if I'll get choked up or not, so we'll just go with it, and whatever happens, happens. But so Julie, it would probably be a really great example of this. I grew up in Wyoming. Which, how many of you are familiar with Wyoming? Anybody? Okay, it is, there's like nobody there. And I grew up in a small town. Actually, our town was the biggest in the area, and there were 6,000 people. So it was a small town, and that really included like all the rural farms around and everything, so it really was tiny. And I had been there, my dad was a pastor there for 16 years, so I was there from the time I was born until I was 14 years old. And when I was 14, my parents surrendered to the mission field, and they took all five of us kids and packed us up and moved us across the country to California to West Coast Baptist College. And my dad was going to get his master's and then base out of Lancaster Baptist Church and start deputation. So that was kind of the plan. So here I am, country girl, as hick as they come, and I was dropped into Southern California. And I did not know what I was doing. I did not fit. I did not look the part. I was not the part. I didn't even know what the part was. So it was honestly not a good, it was scary. And we stepped out. I had to go to orientation for the Christian school. And I stepped onto the property. And this church was averaging around 5,500 people. So now the church is the same size as my town. And I was a misfit. I did not even slightly fit in there. But right away, Julie and Jackie and I don't remember who else was all part of that, but these girls came along and they're like, hey, why don't you sit with us? And they immediately brought me in. Now that's a ninth grade level, but you can see 17 years later, there's still great friendships involved. So at that time, they didn't need my friendship. They had each other, they'd been together, but they saw that maybe I needed it. I'm going to take a drink of water and take a minute. So it's important to remember that idea that even if you think and you're adamant, I don't need friends, there's probably going to be somebody, there will be somebody, whether it's an unsaved person at your work that you can be a friend to and show them the gospel, or if it is somebody in your church, how much more could you make a difference in a new mom who is coming and she's stressed and she's exhausted and she needs help? Or maybe the new Christian that's sitting behind you in church, you know, that needs you to turn around and be a friend to them. So always remember there could be somebody else, even if you don't need a friend, which you do. But if you're adamant that you don't, there might be somebody that can be a friend to you. And then this is another one, and this is probably my biggest thing. I don't have the resources. And I do hear this a lot for hosting. And being a friend doesn't mean you always have to have people over to your house. It is a good step, but it could be going out for coffee. It could be going to do something. It could be if you're both moms, hey, why don't we go do this with our kids? So there are a couple things, just like excuses in this area. My home isn't big enough or it's not presentable. I don't know that my kids will do well. I have been there. I don't have the money. Or my favorite, I don't have the time. It gets busy, and life gets busy, and where do you find the time to invest in those relationships? The truth is, when we look at this, God has given all of us the resources that we need to reach the people that he brings into our lives. So sometimes it is a step of sacrifice. I do know people that maybe they do have a small living room, so have over one couple, or two, you know, or do something small, or just have a mom over. Sometimes it is, God, I don't have a lot, but you can use what I have. Sometimes it is a step of faith. God, we don't have the money. I don't know where we're going to find the money to have these people over. But if he leads you to do it, he'll also be the one to provide that, what you need for that. My husband's really good at this. Now, we do a budget. Hospitality is on there, and we have a set amount. But honestly, hospitality budget doesn't normally stay within hospitality budget. we just have a lot of people over, or this will cost more, or we'll have an activity and maybe not as many showed up, so maybe the income wasn't as much. And he's really good about it. He's always said, if God leads us to do that, he'll be the one to provide what we need to do this. And so, honestly, we've never gone without. We've never not had even fun things that we've wanted to do. We've never gone without for this. So, God takes care of that. But sometimes it is just being a good steward of what you already have. Sorry, my nose is bad. Somebody have a tissue? We're good. Look, Dory. Yes, I have kids. I'm sorry, excuse me. Sometimes it is being a good steward of what we have. So whether it is time or money, what is it that maybe you could cut to be able to have a hospitality budget? Or what is it that you could cut in your schedule to maybe have the time to have somebody over? Maybe it is, my house is never in order, or I don't have an order to do that. What are some small steps that you can take? It doesn't have to be Better Homes and Garden. It can be, it just needs to reflect Christ. And if your home is the best that you can make it, and you're being a good steward of that, then use that. And be thankful for what God's blessed you with and do the best that you can with it. There's always somebody in your reach that needs a friend and encouragement, and those are the people that God's given you to influence. It's definitely a risk worth taking. So, so don't make excuses for it. Thirdly, cultivate friendships in every stage. Okay. So not everybody has a big church. You may not have a lot of people your same age, but you will definitely have some people younger than you and some people older than you. God calls us in Titus 2:3-5. It says, "The aged women likewise, that they be in a behavior that becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed." So he calls us to influence those that are younger than us. So who is in your sphere of people that you can encourage, that you can pour into, that you could help? It may even just be a teenager who's coming through all of those intense decisions of their life, where you can just be there and encourage them and be a help to them. And it may be a younger lady. You also will have those in your same stage. These are your peers. These are the people that you do life with. These are the ones that you're raising your kids together. If you both have young kids, you can be a help to each other. I know this happens a lot on our staff. A lot of us are the same age. And so we all have young kids, and life gets really busy. So it helps to have those people that I can say, hey, we have this activity. Is there any way you can help with the kids? And vice versa. And we kind of have that relationship to know we have each other. So that's very important. And then finding people that are older than you. And again, my husband's a good example on this. When we first got married, he immediately started looking around and saying, okay, who's been married for 40 years? Who's been married for 50 years? Who can we ask questions? How did you stay married so long? Or what's the secret to marriage? And sometimes at that point, they'd be kind of goofy about it. Just say yes or just this. But we got a lot of great tips from those conversations. And then we had kids, and we would watch and see, we really like how they've raised their kids and how their kids have turned out, and they love God. Let's go spend some time with them, ask questions about how to build our family and some tips. So you really, really, really can learn so much from finding people that are further down the road and that are having success, and asking them those questions and taking that time to get to know them. So I think of, just in the Bible specifically, I think of Ruth and Naomi. Ruth respected Naomi so much that she that she stayed with her even when it wasn't comfortable, and developed that relationship with her. So it's really important that we cultivate those. And then also, I mean, this is a stage too in our lives, saved and unsaved. The Bible calls us to be a witness. So whether you're influencing a new Christian, or you are a new Christian, going to someone who has been a Christian for a long time, or if you're at work, you have a lot of friends that maybe are not Christians. What I would say to that is really guard your testimony. Make sure that the things that you get involved in are those things that will glorify God, because you want to guard your testimony, or there's no if that friendship isn't leading towards the gospel and towards that person seeing Christ, then it's not a friendship that you should be cultivating. So show the gospel in your life, and just remember that our purpose is to further the gospel, so make sure your testimony stays pure in that. Whether you're old, you're young, old, mom, grandma, single, married, shy, outgoing, there will always be ladies that you can influence and be influenced by, both spiritually and for everyday life. Okay, so this is the last thing I have to share, and it does get a little negative, but there's positive to it too. So when we've talked about starting with Jesus and having that healthy relationship, we've talked about cultivating those relationships and with them on every level. Now, how do we go deeper? And this is the part that I think it starts. You can have those shallow friendships, but how do you get those friendships deeper? And on this, I want to talk about avoiding the pitfalls. These are the keys to going deeper in our future and existing friendships. So I want to read Colossians 3:8 through 17. It's a little bit longer, but there's a lot here, so we're going to go back to it a couple times. Excuse me a second. Okay, so it says in Colossians 3:8 through 17, and if you want to open there, you're welcome to. If not, that's fine. But now ye also put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all. I'm going to stop right there. I'll come back to it in a minute because it'll tie in. The first one I talk about, and this is kind of where I was saying God confirmed what he wanted me to talk about, because Mrs. Rasmussen talked about this in the last session, but she said she was talking about Instagram and Facebook. So the first pitfall that I would say is editing. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if I post to Instagram, it takes me a really long time. I don't know why it takes me so long, but part of it is that I have 3 little kids, so I probably walk away from about 20 times and come back to it, but it takes me forever. It's going to take me at least 3 pictures to make sure I've got the right picture, and then I'm going to put it on Instagram, and then I'm going to filter through every filter to see which one looks the best. And then I'm going to put the caption, the hashtags, everything and then it's all perfect, and then I finally post it, right? So it takes me, my husband makes fun of me all the time. He's like, are you still posting that? And I'm like, okay, I did step away from it a couple times. But our culture has taught us to edit everything. Not even the process of putting on social media, but even just the what we choose to put on social media. You're not going to see the craziness of family pictures. You're going to see the perfectly posed family all in their place, smiling and being happy. Never mind the fact that 5 minutes ago, everybody was fighting and yelling at each other to get that picture, right? So you don't see the messy. You don't see the real. You see the picture perfect, okay? For me, I might post a picture of my kids being all sweet, snuggling on the couch and reading a book together, but I guarantee you that not even 5 minutes before that, they were at each other's throats and ready to hurt someone. So we only post what makes us feel good, what looks nice. And so our culture has taught us to edit everything. And when we go into relationships, we tend to do the same thing. We tend to make sure our house is perfect before they come over. We tend to make sure that we're very guarded with what we say. We only tell the good stories, not the bad ones. We don't talk about what we struggle with. So in Proverbs 27:17, it says, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. In Proverbs 17:17, it says, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. So like I said, social media, really our culture has taught us to edit those things. And I read this quote, I don't know who said it, that says, vulnerability is our most accurate measurement of courage. When we are, when we're real and we're vulnerable, even in its messiness, we can encourage someone else to help them know they're not alone. We're not the only ones that struggle. And even if you think I'm the only one that struggles with this, I guarantee you share it with someone, you're gonna find out most women struggle with a lot of the same things. So I do wanna be clear, I'm not talking about making light of sin. This is not a, oh yeah, I struggle with that, but God's got grace and he'll give me grace for this. Yes, he gives grace, but he also expects us to be perfected in that grace, not continue to go back and make light of his grace. So I'm not talking about that, but it is okay to say, hey, I struggle with this. Do you have any ideas? Is there something that you've done? Or to say, you know what, I've struggled with that before too, and this is how I got victory. So we share those things, we're vulnerable, because that allows us to help someone and get the help that we need to grow through those things. Those are a lot of times that's what God gives us, to grow through those things. And not just in our sin, but even in our other struggles. I see this all the time. Motherhood, infertility, miscarriage, health problems, difficult or wayward children. Maybe you have a teenager or an adult child who has gone away from the Lord and has come back or is still away from the Lord. You're not the only one. There are other people that are hurt and struggling. How do I get my child to come back? So you can share with them, listen, this is what I've done. This is where I found comfort. This is what God promises. So being vulnerable allows you to truly influence somebody and be influenced by other people. God has given each of us our own set of struggles and victories to help us encourage those that he puts in our path. And that's where I go back to Proverbs 27:17, where it says, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friends. Sorry. Iron sharpeneth iron does not come from pretending to have it all together. It comes when we take the time to share what we struggle with and sharpen somebody else. So, pitfall number one is editing. Be vulnerable. Take the time to, oh goodness. I thought I was going to fly through this because I was talking so fast at home and she just said I have 5 minutes, so I'm going to rush through the rest of it. So the second pitfall is comparison. Now I have to tell you, these are all rough and I struggled, like as I was doing this, I was like, Lord, I'm convicted to go through these because I struggle with all of these things often on a regular basis. But comparison. This one is a big struggle for ladies, especially with our social media, with Facebook and Instagram. We have the ability to see everybody, and we only see the good, so we tend to compare our bad with the good, and we get that way. And we also, and I'm going to start with this one, superior comparison. This is where we build our convictions, our passions, maybe our lifestyles for us and our families, but then we hold other people to that level as our, that's how we judge them, is how they meet up to that expectation that we've set for us. I'm not talking about biblical ground, I'm talking about when we have our preferences that we set and then we're going to determine what we think of somebody based on that. And this is where I'm gonna go back to Colossians 3. It says in Colossians 3:11-12, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all. This is where we compare. There's no comparison. It's in a way, our pastor said it, the ground is level at the cross. God is what, Christ levels us all at his feet and in his grace. We've all seen it, all the like passionate debates on either Facebook or one-on-one or in groups of ladies where immunization or not immunization, natural childbirth or epidural, education, should we homeschool, should we do Christian school, should we do public school, discipline, how are we going to discipline, breastfeeding or bottle feeding, skincare preferences, homeopathic medicines, and food, this one cracks me up, we could list a page full of opinions and debates, sugar-free, dairy-free, gluten-free, pesticide-free, nut-free, grass-fed, organic, low-fat, low-carb, GMO, BPA, and MSG. We see it all, and I see those passionate debates, and we all laugh about it because it gets heated. But how easily can our passions get the best of us? And soon, often without even realizing it, we think others have to believe the same way that we do, and we start to hold them to that, and that creates an opinion of somebody. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about that superior comparison. In that, we have to remember that Christ has accepted all of us based on our faith and trust in him, and we cannot, who are we to accept or not accept someone based on our simple opinions in light of the cross and what he's done for us? So so don't compare. And then the inferior comparison, and honestly, we'll go back to Colossians 3 again, sorry. In Colossians 3 and verse 15, it says, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also you are called in one body, and be ye thankful." I also think about the story of David and Jonathan, and in their friendship, we can often look and say, I don't have this, or I don't have that, or this person has gotten this, this person has the ability to do this, why don't I get that? And we start to question God. We stop being thankful for what he's given us and what he's done for us, and we start to focus on what he's done for other people. But I think of David and Jonathan, I think, what if Jonathan hadn't stepped aside? What if Jonathan had said, well, who is David to lead? I'm the one that's the heir of the crown. Why should I let him have it? But Jonathan was a good friend to see, this is what God has led Jonathan to do, and I'm going to step aside. I'm going to support. I'm going to allow him to take this position. And that's the heart that we should have for our friends. That is the heart that we should see. sorry, let me just get my thoughts together here. We tend to get the idea of keep up with the Joneses, keep up with what everybody else around us has. How do their kids act? How do they behave? What car do they drive? What kind of house do they have? And we start to compare what we have with them instead of just being grateful for what we have and for what God has blessed them with. And that's a true friendship when we don't compare. And it's okay to say, you know what, this person's really good at singing. Maybe that's just not the spot for me. Or this person can teach. Or this person has this gift, and we allow them to have it. We allow God to lead in their life and not compare with them. God has a unique plan and purpose for each of us. Trying to make yours look like someone else will only lead to exhaustion, discouragement, and lost friendships. When we try to keep up with the Joneses, when we try to compare, that will very quickly lead to misconceived assumptions. I have done this. I have honestly compared with a situation in the past couple of years where I constantly compared with this one person. I would always go back to that. And honestly, I got in my head, I got it to the point where I thought she hated me. And the truth is, like, it was a completely misconceived assumption because of the thoughts that I had had of comparing and thinking I wasn't this or I wasn't that. And I had gotten to the point where I just thought we weren't friends, she didn't like me. And the truth is that wasn't the case at all. And as God started to work in my heart and I started to see that, he was able to bring me out of that. And she's one of my closest friends now. So it's really, we can tend to get those misconceived assumptions, to become jealous, and to be resentful of what we have compared to what someone else has. So don't compare. Be thankful for what we have, and allow your friends to have the life that God intends for them, and enjoy the life that God intends for you. And then lastly, this is the last thing, harboring. And I know there's another session on forgiveness, and I know Ms. Kelly talked about this in the session as well, which is another thing. But Colossians 3:13, going back to this, it says, "Forbearing one another and forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye." Now, when I think about the idea of forgiving someone as Christ has forgiven me, the only word that really comes to mind is impossible, because I know how many times I have not followed what God has for me, and I have not done what he's asked of me, and yet he's always offering that unconditional forgiveness. So when we think about that, it almost seems impossible. We probably all have stories of hurts from someone we consider a friend, and often those hurts will put us on the defense. It'll make us tend to not be vulnerable or not want to engage in that relationship. Our selfish and sinful nature, in our selfish and sinful nature, the idea of offering forgiveness unconditionally is beyond our comprehension. And yet Christ does it for us, and he calls us to follow his example. When we truly recognize God's unending grace in our own messy lives, it becomes a lot easier to not hold things against other people. I know that's for me. When I get to the point where I'm like, God, you've forgiven me of all of this, it becomes really easy to think, you know what, that's really not a big deal. That's not something to bother me. Our connection groups last year went through a book, and my husband wrote it down for me, The Peacemaker by Ken Sand. It's an amazing book. If forgiveness is an area that is a struggle for you, I'm sorry, guys. Yes, I know it's really bright. If I move over, will it help if I move anywhere? Or does it not matter?
Can't see.
Okay. I'm sorry. That sun is like bad, isn't it? Here, I'll go over here, and maybe that will help. So it's a book by Ken Sand. If you struggle, I'm not going to go into it deeply because there is another session on forgiveness, and you'll be able to listen to that online as well. But it's called The Peacemaker, and it talks about the idea of conflict resolution. And it was really a phenomenal study. I really enjoyed it. And it talks about the difference between the things that we can look at God's grace and just kind of let those things roll off our shoulders. And when there's a situation that's just really not that big of a deal, it is not worth the relationship being hindered, those things we need to just give to God and let it roll off and be willing to just, you know what, it's not a big deal. They probably didn't even mean it. That probably wasn't even what they intended. However, there will be times in our lives where there is hurt involved and there is a severing of a relationship or a wall put up. And in those situations, God's very clear in Matthew 18 about going to that person and talking to that person about that. But we should go with the heart of reconciliation in a relationship, not with the heart of revenge. And it's easy to, when we're hurt, to a hurt dog bites back. So when we're hurt, it's easy to go at that with, I'm going to say this, this, and this. Sometimes even in my marriage, I can get to that point where you start to like get defensive, and all of a sudden you say things, and you're like, where did that come from? And that's the idea of harboring something. In our friendships, we can go with that idea of, I need to have this whole thing ready so I can give them my peace of mind, and we can get this settled, and I'm just going to let her have it, and it's done. And that should not be our heart, and that's not God's heart with us. And when we go back to his example, he offers us unconditional forgiveness. And it takes time to build that relationship back up. It takes time to build that trust back up. But we should always, always, always in our friendships not have an attitude of revenge or speaking our mind, but a heart to see the relationship restored. So I know those were a little bit more heavy or I guess negative in that way, but I wanted to keep going back to the idea of following Christ's example in our friendships and starting with our relationship with him. And when we follow that, it will be really easy to have those healthy relationships, to build those friendships. And honestly, there are so many ways we can reach out to people. I love that this is a coffee theme. Coffee is my absolute favorite thing, and there's chocolate and coffee all over this church right now, so this is absolutely my favorite ladies' conference ever. But there's so much we can do, and it's as simple as having a lady over for coffee, younger, older, same age, and just spending some time or going out to coffee. Enjoy. These are the people that God has given us to do life with. These are the people that we have that make life fun. You get to go and do more exciting things. And as a couple, and as families, and as individuals, find those friends that you can enjoy life with, you can go through life with, you can spend that time with, you can play games, you can have over for coffee. We have good friends that every year they come over for the Super Bowl. And it's honestly, like at this point, because I'm speaking a couple times for this, I looked at her and I said, I have football-themed plates and football-themed napkins. And that's all I have. So if you want to come watch the game with us, you can. But I don't even know if I have food for the plates. We'll see. But we just laugh about it. And they'll come over and we'll all be in our PJs. And, it'll be fun. So find those people that you get to enjoy life with. We all struggle in different areas. But when we can When we start with Jesus, when we find our identity in him and follow his example, the end result will be those iron sharpeneth iron friendships. And they are exciting and they are fun and they are so deep and so wonderful. And again, these are the people that God gave us to do and enjoy life with. It is a risk worth taking. Yes, it can be a risk. Yes, there can be hurt involved. But it is totally, totally, totally a risk worth taking and an investment worth making. So I hope that was a blessing and a help to you. And we will pray and go to dinner. So thank you, ladies. Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you for your goodness. I thank you for your example and friendship that even I was able to learn more about as I studied for this. And I pray that as we go back to our churches, as we go back to our homes, as we go back to our work lives, Lord, that you would show us those people that you have for us to influence and those people that you have for us to learn from. And Lord, I just thank you for your wonderful example, your wonderful love, an example of a selfless love. Lord, we love you so much. We thank you for your goodness. In Jesus' name, amen.